supposedly back. This janky little podcast that might be operational this time, according to Morgan. But we're here with a guide, not a new guide, but he is new to on the podcast, and he is kind of new to our addition to our team, even though he's worked a full season for us already. And that is, drum roll.
Yep, I'm Cole Campbell, first year guiding complete.
So I wrote down a couple of things. I got that you are a veteran, husband, father, business owner, and houndsman.
Wannabe houndsman. Trying to become one.
So we can elaborate on some of those things. So how did Cole get into hunting?
Oh, my dad hunted a little bit, and I guess I just hounded him about going out and actually going hunting. So I'd be the one knocking on his bedroom door at 4:30. Can we go elk hunting?
So you grew up in Montana.
Yep, born and raised most of the time just south of Missoula, Florence, and then later on moved to Missoula. We moved around quite a bit as a kid. My dad was a house builder as well, so every couple years we'd end up moving.
There isn't a lot of small game hunting around here, really. I mean, there is, but there isn't. Not like back east, they have, like, it's kind of, you would think it was goofy, but you have a squirrel season, like things like that. That, like, it's easy to get kids introduced, which you can shoot squirrels anytime you want around here. So
yeah, I spent most of my time walking around my yard and my neighbor's yards unknowingly shooting stuff with a pelican.
Most child.
Yeah. Or shooting at a cardboard box with my bow, pretending it was some elaborate animal.
Ground squirrels.
Yep. Yeah, there was plenty of gopher hunting and getting in trouble with that back in the day from neighbors.
And then you joined the military out of...
Yep, right out of high school. I went to the Marine Corps and then moved back to Montana, spent a few years, and then joined up with the Guard. Now I'm still in the Guard.
What got you involved in hunting? Like, what part of hunting made you want to keep doing it?
I don't know. I guess I just truly enjoy it. I mean, you know, when you're a young hunter, it's the bloodlust portion of it. So you like the killing of the animals, per se. But it's just, once you shoot something, then you're happy. And now anymore, it's more just the chase of it and excuse to get outside and see different and new things.
So do you believe in the stages of hunters?
Yeah, I do.
Like just what you were talking about, like young, you want to shoot everything that lives, breathes, choke it, stab it.
Yep, exactly.
Smashing frogs and tadpoles in the mud holes.
Yeah, pretty much anything you could shoot, you'd try and shoot. But yeah, I definitely think you kind of progress through those stages, or hopefully you do, and you don't just sit inside that killing stage for your entire hunting career.
Yes, then you would hope that everybody progresses up into that. And then I don't know what's next, because I'm kind of in that same state. I'm a little bit older than you. How old are you, Cole?
I'm 30.
30?
Yep.
All right. I'm very curious how someone that doesn't come from an extreme hunting family is as good a hunting as what you are. Because usually you're mentored, and, you know, and honestly, like, I know that you had to grind it out extremely hard to...
Yeah. I mean, one of the kind of, probably the biggest mentor I had, when I was 8, my dad was building the Come On in Missoula. He was one of the contractors on it. And he met a guy, and then he's like, oh, I'm going to go archery elk hunting. And I was like, no way. I was like, can I go with you? And he's like, no. So I got left behind, and he comes back, and he's telling me about bugling bulls and seeing bighorn sheep and stuff. And I was like, no way. So then that guy, he was a guide up here for 14 years. He was still doing a little bit of guiding at that point. So he introduced us kind of to the area, and then we've been coming up ever since. And my parents bought property up here in 2003, so since then it's just been trying to come up here as much as I could. And then I hunted with my dad, so I would have been 12, and I was on the football team and stuff, and I went bow hunting. We going down inside of a canyon and let off a bugle. Obviously I had no idea what I was doing. Let off a bugle, I mean, place just lights up, and I was like, yep, this is it. I was like, I'm done playing sports. It's like, all I want to do is go hunting. So since then it's been kind of, you know, full steam ahead. And then next year I started bow hunting by myself. That neighbor guy that I'd hunt with, he'd always go to spot A, I'd go to spot B. He'd send me on, you know, scouting missions and stuff. He dropped me off as 13 years old, and I'm bow hunting elk by myself in the woods out here.
What'd you see?
yeah, exactly. Like, how was that? And I'm like, brush both ways.
Well, he must have trusted you enough that he wasn't going to have to go look for you in the evening.
Yeah, it was fun. And then I kind of just gradually progressed past that and kind of developed my own hunting style and stuff.
So where did guiding come in? Why would you want to take away from your own hunting to go and hunt someone else?
I don't know. I guess I've felt that I've killed enough stuff myself, and I was like, well, it gets me out in the woods more. And I was like, it greatly increases my hunting time. So that was kind of the main thing for me. And I had a couple of guiding job offers outside high school that I didn't do. And then once I moved back to Montana, then I was like, well, I want to kind of catch up on hunting for myself. And then, yeah.
Yep, here we are.
Yep, here we are.
I figured, knew you would get along good with all the guides because you're military. You've had to deal with all sorts of personalities in close quarters from right out of high school. So there's always some butt munch guides that you always got to deal with, or someone on the team, you know what I mean? So I didn't figure that would ever be a problem. And those are all things that we like think about when you're bringing someone in.
Yeah.
Because everybody's low on sleep. 4 hours of sleep for about 2 weeks in a row, and you get to find out who's grumpy in the mornings and who needs the sun to come up.
Yeah.
That would be me. But.
No, I mean, nobody here's a whiner inside this camp. They don't come back and whine from the day.
No. It's taken us a while to get to the crew that we have now, but I've been telling everybody all year that since I've been in the guiding since 2004 at different locations in different places, this is the best crew I've ever worked with.
Yeah. That was kind of a big thing for me to stay on, too, is kind of when I was talking to my wife about it. I was like, well, I'll try it for a year, and I was like, I'll see how I like it. And it's like, if I don't, it's like, well, then I'm not going to come back. But yeah, with the crew you guys have, and like you guys running the outfit, I was like, well, I actually like working here. Because that was kind of one of the big reasons why I didn't want to get into it, because my neighbor would tell me stories about one of the previous outfitters working for up here and stuff, and he just made it seem like a nightmare.
Sometimes it is a nightmare. I know just from what we came from, like in our transition year and everything, just seeing that and throwing guides into a team that people that had no business guiding and all
great
of that
hunters.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Great hunters don't always make the best guides, and vice versa. Great guides sometimes aren't always the best hunters. And
yeah.
It's a fine line to have a person that's really good at it. It takes a certain personality. It takes a lot of qualities. And you're on point with all of them, brother, so far. I mean, it's been awesome. I've never seen too many people just pick it. Goodwin was like you. You could have pulled Goodwin off of the logging job in 30, and he's just the killer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's the same, just good hunters, good people skills.
Yeah, yeah. And I like, too, that you can actually talk to the guides in the evenings. Not everyone's, like, secretive about where they're actually hunting. And it's like, well, I got into deer here today and stuff. And they're like, well, you care if I go in there tomorrow? And it's like, no, it's like, go up this way. It's like, go off this point. And it's like, that's where I seen him. So, and it doesn't seem like there's any spot burning and stuff.
No, and that's a work in process. And that is one of the biggest things with outfits. The only place I've never seen any struggles with that is working in bear camps. Because
yeah.
Everybody's working the same exact spots. But it's, guides have to step away. And they have to not have see-through pants. It's a good way to put it. And they have to just work for the greater good of the whole outfit. And that's a struggle because egos get in the way when it comes to hunting. It's nice to come back in here every week and be the man.
Yeah.
it's Sunday orientation. Aren't you the one that got those bulls? I saw it on Facebook. Yeah, that's me. That's nice going into the week. It gives you confidence.
But I also think that the guides that have been with us for a long time they've seen it whenever people were keeping secrets and burning spots and hunting over top of each other. And now they see how, like, the troublemakers always drop off or they always leave because they don't fit in. And now the team is, like, conversing and talking. And the whole entire year was successful. Like every guide consistently was either getting opportunities or getting kills. And it was because everyone was working as a team, which was huge because it took a long time to be able to find six guides that can do that together without any major problems. But it wasn't always like that.
Yeah.
Usually I felt like a high school principal. That was like my job. I'd have to be like, okay, we're breaking up this fight. They're gossiping over here, and no one was sitting together, and it was just very awkward. So now that the, you know, senior guides can see it, then it keeps them continuously conversing with everybody.
Yeah, Webley and I talk about it constantly because we've worked together for a long time, and he's seen good, bad, and
yeah,
he could go work anywhere in the valley.
Yeah,
he's a stud.
Yeah,
I mean, and the greatest reputation is you could probably get, and he chooses to keep working with us just because he likes the crew, how it interacts like that.
Mm-hmm.
He loves that, and there's some new faces changing on outfits and things, and I imagine you're going to see more of that across the board here in the valley, other outfits included.
Yeah,
we're not going to be the exception anymore. It'll be the norm, hopefully. So what does your wife think of this?
She likes it and she doesn't. Obviously, I'm not home bulk of the time, but I don't know. She's so used to it at this point. Like, first year that she moved up here with me, because she's from California, I think she was a little shocked at how much I was gone. And then we moved up more this way, and that helped, so I was home more, but still gone a lot.
The worst argument that my wife likes to do, she'll be like, she doesn't really think of it as a job because you love it so much. It's like not a real job, but it is everything that a real job is. I just love it. It's not my fault or your fault.
It is a real job, but it's a lot easier of an argument whenever you have to do the siding on houses and building stuff. Then I can say, well, you know, you're not working that hard. You're still enjoying it. You need to do something you don't enjoy. Since I'm over here doing computer work and editing podcasts and all that kind of stuff all the time. So it's a lot easier.
And that was a great segue, Morgan.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do on your when you're not guiding, is you put siding, build houses. That's what you're...
Yeah, and I will just say, if it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't be able to do this if she didn't put up with it. So she's very supportive of pretty much everything I do and each new hobby that I get into. Yeah, I know as soon as I went back and I put the tool belt back on, I was like, I wish I was still in the woods right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that rain.
Yeah.
It sounds so terrible when you're sitting in the truck in the morning and you're procrastinating going out because you look back at your backpack, it's wet from yesterday, but it still beats laying block in a trench or any type of...
Sitting under the roof siding when it's just dripping water on you the whole day, and it's like, I'd rather be doing something I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
I think that, especially not doing it all the time, it gives you a lot of passion for when that time of year comes about.
Yeah.
And then you being local here, so you get to do a lot of scouting, and we've been hound hunting every chance that we can get out. We've been chasing the dogs.
Yeah, I've probably been delaying my priorities in life a little too much and going hunting too much with the dogs.
As soon as you start hound hunting, that is a problem.
I should be much farther along with my house than I am.
I think every houndsman's wife can agree everything gets put aside as soon as the seasons start to open. And in Montana, we have a very long season. Whenever you transition from the lions and to the bears, plus the training seasons in between and after, a lot of priorities get pushed back.
Hold on.
So any houndsmen's wives that are listening to this, they don't have to feel alone. I think it's across the board that happens.
When you have a young dog and he is coming 2 years old and doing good, you only have until they're 8 years old and then they're done. Once one hunting day goes by that you didn't go and use that dog's skill up, that's one day you're not getting back ever.
Yeah, you feel bad when it's like nice weather out for like going out and looking for a track, and it's like you look at your dog outside and you're like, I should have went today.
Yeah, if you'd feed him in the mornings, you'd go hunting every day.
Yeah, and then you get back at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're like, well, there's still 3 hours of daylight left.
That evening stuff, we got lucky on an evening deal just the other week.
Mm-hmm.
We turned loose on a lion track that was over top of the plow, and we ended up catching it like right away.
That was like 10-15 minute race.
I was nervous. I was like, we're going to cold trail way up on the mountain. Snow's kind of crusted up there a little bit. And
he must have just went up on that old road and pretty much just bedded in there and was just listening to the cars drive by him.
Yeah, he wasn't more than 175 yards on that little rim.
No, even when we walked out that track and we were kind of looking at it, I mean, we had to have been probably 100 yards away from him because Gonzo jumped him. I mean, he hit pretty much those tracks and then hooked left and hadn't jumped pretty much right there, it seemed like.
Yeah, that's, you never know. And that's the wildest thing about some of these lion tracks. They could be so old and you turn loose and they're just like that bang up.
Yeah.
That whole race wasn't 700 yards long.
Mm-hmm.
600.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice because you could actually hear him from the road for once, barking treed rather than walk into somewhere. And
yeah, well, that's always not nice because we heard him treeing a couple days after that, and they were 2.3 miles from the truck, and you could hear him exactly the same until they were 300 yards away. It sounded no different.
Yeah.
It was awful.
So when did you start getting into hound hunting? And what made you decide to start getting into it?
I don't really know why I got into it. I guess I just looking for another opportunity to get inside the woods again. And I was like, well, that looks fun and I've never done it before. So I had one friend who'd been running hounds for, I don't know, 10 years at that point. And so I kind of inquired with him about it. And then he texted me like 6 months later and he's like, hey man, I just had some puppies if you want some. And my wife was pregnant at that point too. And I was like, she's probably going to say no. But she's like, I know if I go up there and I see a puppy, she's like, I'm going to leave with one. Sure enough, we left with one. And I don't really know, but I like it now. I like it a lot.
You can make stuff happen. That's my favorite thing with hound hunting. Like if you go out today, it would be tough to find an elk real quick. You know what I mean? But you can grind with a dog and scour country. And I believe you can make more hunting opportunities happen with a dog by hunting hard.
Yeah.
You can also waste a lot of gas and wander around and spend endless days not doing anything if you just go through motions. But
that's what it seems like a lot of if you're just driving roads and stuff. You're just, especially once you get to the point of the year where you need snowmobiles and you're just towing around trailers, and then you snowmobile up a road and come back and then keep checking roads. And it's like, am I ever going to find a track?
It's an endless amount of gear.
Or stuff breaking.
Hound rigs, keeping a hound rig in operation, people do not understand the struggle of that.
Yeah.
For real.
Well, when I met you, I was stuck in, when you guys came pulling up in the dark, I found out that my four-wheel drive was broke as I was in the ditch on the side of the road.
Well, that's when you started hunting with us pretty much after that.
Yeah, yeah.
Good bit.
Yeah, yeah. Prior to that, I was pretty much just hunting by myself. I ran with my buddy Missoula on bears a couple times, but lion hunting, I'd just been by myself previous to that.
And you're just teaching yourself?
Yeah, pretty much. Go out, find a track, walk it with the dogs, and go from there.
What did you think of this season with clients?
I didn't really notice a difference besides they're just slower to get to the tree.
You get some hound guys together, you can make some stuff happen, though. You can,
yeah.
You can catch some game with some good dogs and some good houndsmen.
Well, and I mean, for me, this year didn't really change because I didn't have to ride around with clients. So I was pretty much just on my own looking for tracks. And then once we did turn dogs out, it's like, well, I'm just going to go walk with dogs and see at the tree or see it back at the truck.
Yeah, so we do it. There's a lot of, I hear a lot of people do it different ways. You can hear hound puppy in the back.
Yeah.
So some people don't find clients. I get they don't get them to come in until they have great snow. We do a 6-day hunt, and however it falls on the calendar, you're the only client in camp, and we have a crew here. Usually most of the guides stay right on and they hunt, help us look for tracks, just being a part of it because we've grinded for 3 months already and it's just fun. There's one client in camp and so everybody can just do their own thing. You can hike at your own pace, going looking for tracks.
Yeah.
And with the wolves around, we like to keep, I call them runners, would be the best for lack of words, is someone to get into the tree as soon as things start to stall out or you know that the dogs are treed, you get someone in the woods there with them. Because audibles, like we were just talking about, can cover a large distance. So you don't want wolves coming in, killing your dogs and so on and so forth. So you guys are in elk shape. You guys boogie right in. So you're sitting underneath the trees waiting on us the whole time.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah, that's the nice part, is you're just going to go sit up the tree with the dogs and that's keep them there and then you can kind of actually relay like what's in the tree and stuff. And
the best way to learn hound hunting is just boots on the ground, just following dogs and tracks.
Yeah.
And you do that a ton.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably my favorite. And then like watching and listening to the dogs work is probably the best part to it.
Yeah.
Sitting in the truck, looking at the GPS is kind of painful.
Yeah. So my dad, he can, it's like watching a trapper, you know what I mean? Like they can read sign and do things. My dad watching that GPS, he is seeing completely different things just from 40 years of running hounds. He, you know what I mean? He, when the dog hooks off there, he knows, he has to know which dogs are doing their part first. And then once he knows what dogs he needs to look for, he can watch that GPS and tell everything that's going in the woods. But when you're just learning, what the heck is that thing?
Yeah, because I'd be on the hill and I'd hear him over the radio and I'd be like, yeah, that line did this. And I was like, well, Jim, you're right. It's like, because that's what I'm seeing on the ground.
Yeah, my dad, he's a pain in the butt, but he is a houndsman, I will say.
Well, and it seems like he likes kind of the guys, the runners going off in the wood and stuff and trying to like pick him back up and kind of coordinating all the aspects of it and stuff. And it seems like he likes walking in with the clients too.
He always says that in hound hunting, you start as a radio man and you end as a radio man. So when you're a kid, you're always in the truck and they'd be like, hey, sit in the truck. We'll talk on you on the radio. And if you got to move the truck up and down the road, you go get a little responsibility.
Right? Yeah.
And they're in the woods. Well, now he's old and we're in the woods and he's on the radio again. So it's kind of comes full circle.
Well, at least he's still getting out in the woods. That's what counts.
He does good still. He's got some powerhouse bear dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so where I grew up, that's what it is. It's a very strong bear hunting traditional area. And you can do it in West Virginia. You can train dogs year-round. Now, I grew up in Pennsylvania, but my whole family was from West Virginia. And my dad had a lifetime license. So we could train year-round down there, and it made it very nice.
Yeah.
A lot different than everything being based around a season. It's very weird because none of our hound hunting was based around a season. A lot of the serious houndsmen, they would hound hunt a little bit during season, but mainly it was summer nights and things like that, going out
in
early August in the mornings when the guys were hunting every Saturday, and big groups of guys. The season was just everybody showed up, and that's when the real hound guys, they didn't want to go. And you had a lot of guys that hadn't run their dogs all year, so deer chases and crazy stuff like that. And then here we are. Our dogs sit on a chain or in a kennel all fall.
Yeah.
Here come clients. Now let's get a bunch of crazy psycho dogs out that are just out of control, and we have to take clients when they're supposed to be on their best behavior. And it's a little rough.
It seems like they know, too, when the weather starts to change. They're like, all right, game time's coming up. And then they're, like, at the gate every single day as you're, like, getting in the truck to dark. And you're like, well, you're not going with me today. 1 week or 2 weeks. And
yeah, they know when that snowmobile, when we start fooling with the snowmobiles, because they have to get ready. We have to make sure they're prepped and ready for clients. Yeah. And we start pulling them around and moving them around there in November. The dogs start getting amped up. They know that's part of their tool.
Yeah, and that's kind of the nice thing is you get to the end of November and you get kind of burnout on deer and elk, and you're just like, all right, come on, lion season.
It's a great excuse to being so passionate about something. We can use it that we're going out there and helping after creating mayhem and murder on all the poor innocent deer and elk. They can at least sleep good at night.
Until they get burned up by a hound.
Yeah.
Getting run down. Sorry about that one. Well, it's like, that was the first race of the year. My bad.
So everybody has a couple off chases a year, but it seems like my dogs, they don't run so much deer and elk if they're bumping stuff. Now, they did this year. They bumped the mule deer a little bit. But coyotes, fishers, pine martens, weird things like that, whenever you're grinding, not finding anything, and dogs, they just get over-rambunctious, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. And that was kind of a major learning curve for me, too, this year, was trusting my one younger dog. Because as soon as I think that she was, like, starting to go on the wrong track, I'd catch up to, like, where she was at. And it's like, well, sure enough, it's like you're actually running the line. It's like, and you're not pulling off of it.
You were trusting the wrong dog.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was learning more to trust the dogs. I mean, I don't know why it changed from line to bear, because, like, bear season, I just trust a dog. You know, you're dry ground. It's like they start racing on something, and it's like, well, I can't see a track, and it's like, just let you go. But it's like, then here come lion season, and now you're running the wrong thing, but turns out you're right.
Yeah, and those are two totally different races. The intensity levels and the difference of looping and swoop. It looks like spaghetti noodles with lions.
Yeah.
And sometimes when they're cold trail, especially when a lion's been hunting, and a bear track is just
yeah,
lights out on a latitude, and usually they can pick contour line on a map and just blaze it until they got it treed.
So have you noticed since you started hound hunting, has it made you a better hunter or guide?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm paying a lot more attention to like how stuff moves through the woods and stuff. I'm looking a lot more like tracks and everything, and kind of a little more conscientious of that. And then just the places that you go following dogs, you're going into a lot of new places that you know is a crappy place that you don't want to walk through, and then you walk through it in the snow following dogs.
Yeah. Consistently looking back, the guides or even apprentices that have been introduced into hound hunting at any age, really, it seems like they have just a completely different knowledge of the woods and hunting and game in that area. So I didn't know since you started later on if you saw a difference.
I would say so. It's just making me a little more attentive. I mean, I kind of have a rule, like when I'm hunting, to not look at the ground too much, because you watch guys walking down trails and all they do is just sit there and stare at their feet. And it's like, you can't do that in this country, because most of the time it's like, or even a sling. It's like, I don't like when a hunter uses a sling on a rifle, because it's like when you're walking and you can only see 50 yards, stuff happens fast around here.
Very fast. Yeah, I think that you can, a lot of just not even being with the game from summer to pre-rut, rut, post-rut, to like going into wintering areas, just having that knowledge of how those animals, because during lion season, you're finding those pockets of mule deer, where those elk are at, where them big toms are feeding on them. You're like, well, that's where this big group of elk, they come down into here. They've been here the whole, mean, and it just unlocks a lot of little things in it, and allows you to open your mind up to how much that animal traverses and actually uses the landscape instead of.
Yeah.
That's what always blew my mind, just being able to keep track of certain things throughout that whole entire year, and then following lions into the sweetest mule deer spots usually.
And it seems like once that snow flies too, you kind of get a better sense of how many animals are on the mountain too. I mean, not just off what's, I mean, a lot of that stuff isn't crossing roads ever. I mean, we get kind of these big pockets up here that you get wound into, and then you're actually seeing how many animals are on the ground.
So growing up in a place where it's a lot sparser timber, a lot more open country, and then guiding and living in an area where it's heavy timber, which do you prefer?
My heart says the deep timber, but then typically I'd take a trip out like somewhere eastern Montana or southwest Montana where it's a little more open, just so for a change of pace, and you're like, man, I can actually see.
I like the timber because it does remind me of back where I grew up. Heavy timbered, and I believe it hides a lot of the animals. It gets the age on them.
Oh, 100%. I mean, those big bulls, I mean, that you're in a sea of timber, and some of those bulls never come out, and it seems like they never hit daylight in their mature years.
And archery's the way to kill bulls in this heavy timber, and I think you were the...
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of hit on the first year of you guiding with us. You know, you come in archery season,
guns a-blazing, Cole.
Full force. Your percentage in archery season was overall like 120% honest opportunities at 35 yards or less. So
some of your dudes had like 3 opportunities a week.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that the first client, first day I had a bull at 25 yards, but there was just a little bit of alder in the way, and then went in there same spot the next day, and then he missed a bull, and then kind of had a little dry spell on there. Well, it rained for those 2 days, just that downpour. We had a bull, but then he moved out of the country, and it seemed like he kind of went up and over the hill and out of where we can hunt. But he ended up killing a bull that last night, what I thought wasn't a good shot, which where the arrow hit, I don't know. It was how that arrow deflected into it, but either way, he killed the bull, so that's what mattered.
I feel like every 3 or 4 times every week, you would be texting me, hit one, missed one, got one, need packers. So it was just funny because usually the guides go from like an apprenticeship into guiding. And Josh was like, no, we're going to hire this guy. He's going to be great for the team. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. And then all of a sudden archery season took off and it was a really good one. And you brought in a lot of bulls.
Yeah, archery was kind of, I mean, still is my love of hunting besides the hounds. I mean, yeah, you just dream about it pretty much year round about it. So I've been pretty successful the past couple of years that I didn't even get to hunt much. I mean, I'd be killing the first 2-3 days of season, but I wasn't picky either, so.
Yeah. Now, how is it? Explain how it's different just hunting for yourself and how it is guiding someone that you have to also teach.
It can be frustrating and it can be really fun. Just like seeing the guys, how much they enjoy it once they actually get on elk and stuff. Some of the people doesn't seem like they realize that it's not the hunting videos. You're not hunting a private ranch here. I mean, you're hunting big, steep canyons with elk that seem to be inside pockets inside these places. But no, I mean, I enjoyed it just because I got to hunt so much. I got to pretty much hunt. Well, I hunted 3 weeks, so I got to hunt most of September. So that part was nice. But I don't know. I mean, any job, there's ups and downs to it, but I liked it. I liked all my clients this year, so that helped too. I got along with all of them.
I keep saying all of our clients last season, they came out very prepared. You weren't with us the prior seasons, but we've had seasons where guys were not ready to hunt in this terrain and were not prepared and did not seem to care to get prepared. And then last season, taking months and months to talk to our clients all the time and tell them what gear to do, get and what workouts to do. It seemed like it made a huge difference.
Yeah. And I mean, for some of this, I really don't know how you go inside of a gym and even prepare for it. I mean, cause archery comes and I really don't like walking trails or roads. I kind of like just bombing down through the timber. And it's like the way you twist your leg over a downfall, side hilling through all this stuff. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. There's no way to prepare for it.
Yeah. And I mean, I learned this year, you know, you love hunting so much and you have all these spots in your head and you're like, all right, day one, like this is where we're going to go. And you kind of go off your own hunting abilities and you take a guy in there and you're like, whoops, burned him a little too hard on day one.
Yeah.
That's usually the hardest hurdle to get over in guiding, or to like have a spot where you're like, I only got to take one bull out of there, but it's your spot and how you can soft touch that to make it good once a week. You know, what I mean? Those are the little nuances of guiding that's, those are the little niches.
Yeah, and then, you know, you get on the elk and, like, they're like, well, just call that bull in and, like, let's just go in there. And it's like, now's not the time. It's like, if we go in there now, it's like the wind's swirling every 10 minutes. And it's like, we can't go inside there. It's like, we just got to sit here. It's like, do you want these elk to be here later today and tomorrow? It's like, you just got to wait for the conditions to be right.
Yeah, and that goes back to where you said that most of the, with our clients and that, have been good. And I think that's just us trying to be honest with them. It drives me nuts. We're just coming up back from shows and things like that, that outfit or just hunters in general do not give elk the justification that they deserve for being such a hard critter to kill.
Yeah.
They sell it as easy. That way they sell it as a thing that anybody can come do that way, 'cause everybody's money's green.
Yeah.
But I can 100% assure you that not everybody is an elk hunter and can be an elk hunter.
No, especially in this country. And in reality, 6 days in this area is, I mean, that's a short bit of time to kill a bull.
Anywhere. Unless you're on, even on a private land hunt or something like that is not, if you go public land, I've hunted quite a few states in the West on public land and I've never seen them be any easier for the animal being wise and hard to get on, unless you're shooting one on private ground with a rifle. It's not very hard then.
Yeah. I mean, it probably depends on the private ground too.
Exactly. But when you go to chasing these animals and it's just the regular old elk tag that we can all get a hold of, they're clever.
Well, and you're dealing with all the other yahoos in the woods too. I mean, you'll sit there in the hills and I mean, a guy starts a rut fest by himself on the bugle tube. He's just every 5 minutes just screaming away on it. And you and the bull are sitting down there listening to him. He goes away and that bull is probably going to go off again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I knew you would fit our team so well just from talking archery and stuff with you. 'Cause you do it the same that we do it. And that the whole crew, anybody that archery elk that knows what they're talking about, that's how you got to go about it.
Yeah. And not every day is a scream fest. I mean, those bulls, the temperature on those bulls fluctuates through the season and stuff.
Yeah, it's learning the estrus, and I don't think there's very many people, even few professionals out there that understand the biology of an elk estrus.
Yeah.
Very few, and especially not many people that are explaining it to the public. So then everybody's all sorts of twisted up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You get it. We get it at the shows all the time. They want us to pick the best weeks to come out. And you're trying to explain. And even with our honest opportunity chart that I have, and, you know, they're like, oh, well, we want to go week one because 85% of the clients killed. And it's like, yeah, but week one we had return clients and they were... they've been here three or four different times and they've hunted with us, so they get it and they know the terrain and they know how to prepare. And these guys might have killed a bull, these guys have seen a bull, you know. And then week two might have been the best action-packed week that we had, but we had all brand new clients that have never been here before, and that makes a huge difference. So it's so hard to explain all of that to people.
And the weather's never the same every single year. It tends to change no matter kind of what week it is and everything.
Yeah.
To be a good elk hunter, anytime any of that's thrown at you, you got to be like, well, it's hot. I don't have to worry about hunting the southern exposures this time.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean? You got to be a chameleon to be an elk hunter, and everything, you got to be able to roll it. But if you know the area and the animals in that area, those would be problems if you were a DIY person. Those help out for like you and me and all of us that hunt here all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you see a lot of people, they'll come up here, or like back in the day, they used to come up here and try and hunt this country, and they do it for one weekend or a week, and a lot of them never come back.
Yeah. I know when I first started coming around early 2000s, there was wall tent camps everywhere. People coming in, up by the big burned area on the on the border, state border, there would be tons of camps up there, and there's nothing in that country. I think it has a little bit to do with that the burns are getting a little bit old and not holding, those areas aren't holding the same amount of animals. Things seems like they're spread out a lot more than like condensed in different big canyons.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting a little bit of that more again because of timber cutting and big fires that have happened the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and that's kind of the fun part about it, too, is figuring out where they're kind of living inside of it. And then you go, and, like, when you're actually going to, like, think about trying a new spot, you go inside there, and you're like, nah, no. Or you find a place, and you're like, yep, it's like I'm going to be coming back inside here again. Yeah.
So, you excited for the upcoming year? You got a baby on the way.
Yeah, he's due April 15th, so... right at the start of bear season. Yeah, because Morgan asked me last year, or like right at the beginning of winter, and she's like, you want to do any spring bear? And I was like, if I do, my wife's gonna kill me.
And we don't want that. We want her to be happy and still love you having this job. So we're excited for you to welcome in another. So it's a boy.
Yeah. Oh, so two boys. Yep. I'll have my own elk pack and crew when I'm
perfect.
Older.
Perfect. That's perfect.
We love when all the kids are, you got Zeph and Reed running around blowing bugle tubes and carrying. I love that, a whole family vibes that our crew gives out. That's big.
Do you have anything to add or any stories of guiding season or?
No, nothing real crazy. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Anything to tell the clients? What's your best advice on how to get ready for this season? Archery.
Just do your best to get in shape. Know that this is hunting and not just shooting. So come in with expectations that if you kill something, cool. And if you don't, it is what it is. I mean, it's hunting. So enjoy your time. It's only 6 days. When you think you want to quit on something, you probably only have 3 days left to this hunt. And if you quit early, you're going to go home and sit on the couch and be like, man, I shouldn't have quit early. You never know what's around the corner. So just keep hunting.
Yep.
That's a good closing. We're going to close her out right there. That was a good ending.
All right.
All right. This is us over and out.